This is December 17th, 2017. And almost canceled the Tay Show this morning. A couple hours ago, I thought it would just be too awkward with this little injury I have. It's I think we said that in a Sangha email. I had a little tear in my calf, and this morning was the worst it's been in 6 days with the swelling and pain. What I found a couple hours ago was that the sitting itself isn't too bad. Right now, I'm fine. It's just getting off the baton at the end of the Tay Show. It'll be kind of ridiculous. But that's not a reason to cancel the Tay Show. And I was excited about the topic and didn't want to just save it for next year, because it is a seasonal topic, which is the holidays. My mind always goes to what's current, what's going on, what might be on people's minds, mine and others' minds. And I once, not for the first time, appreciated how much we have to make Zen practice applicable in our daily lives. It's not just something to do for an hour a day or half an hour or 2 hours a day. It's something we have to integrate into our lives. And at the holiday season, that for many people that means social gatherings, family, work gatherings, parties, and other parties, and how this then becomes our practice, like everything else, like washing our hands or vacuuming or driving. And then I came to appreciate in the last couple days what a great opportunity it is for practice, for a work of particularly of mindfulness and concentration when we're in social gatherings. These two, I've said more than once that we can distinguish in Zen meditation between concentration and mindfulness. Zen practice is really the fusion of these two, of concentration and mindfulness. The concentration probably is the more obvious one, where we're trying to hold the mind steadily on one thing, on the breath, the koan, in a focused, concentrated way. And how do we do that? How do we apply that when we're in social gatherings? Well, primarily by listening. There is such a profoundly important thing about listening. Listening to your partner, listening to your children, listening to your teacher, your teachers, listening to people who are in need, people who are suffering, people who are telling their story. And some of these we get to exercise in social gatherings. It's all too easy in a social gathering to let the mind wander, because there's all this stuff going on around us. So many other people, other things happening. But beyond that, it can be challenging. Depending on who it is, who you're listening to, it can be challenging to just listen, really focus, concentrate on what they're saying. It's really not much daylight between concentration and listening. They're really very much the same thing. In fact, even in sitting practice, when we're let's say, working on the koan mu, it becomes, when we're concentrated enough, it becomes a kind of listening. Because it's an opening. When we're concentrated, we're open, we're receptive. Breath practice too. When I try to just explain to people how to do breath practice, I sometimes find myself saying that it's a kind of an internal listening. Rather than visualizing, it's not so much seeing the breath in a column, a moving column going up and down or in and out of the lungs, or in Theravadin practice they will often say to visualize your breath coming out of your nostrils. But in Zen, in my experience, it's more it's not literally listening, because we should be breathing silently. Our breath should not be audible, especially when with other people, when we're sitting with other people. But it's kind of an internal hearing. But it really means awareness, noticing, and focusing, concentrating. And that becomes the opportunity when we're listening to someone at a social gathering, especially someone who may not be much fun to be listening to, who might be boring, egoistic, repetitive. But there it is. It's a test. Really, everything in our lives is a test of our practice. So to test oneself at social gatherings is important. And there's an old saying in Zen, the sage of the mountains is not the true sage. The true sage is the sage of the marketplace or the mall. The modern marketplace, or any social gathering. So, especially if we notice ourselves getting bored with someone, or finding the mind flitting around, wondering how we can get out of this away from this person, it's not so different from sitting in the zendo and wondering how we can get out of the zendo when we have pain in the legs. What do you do? What is the answer? You become one with it. Stop trying to escape it. Or the best way to escape it is to become one with it. Of course, there are people with social anxiety who would avoid social gatherings, either with family or with friends or coworkers or others. We have to be careful not to make that seem too noble. There are people who might say, "Well, no, I'm not going to that because that's just samsara. That's just a lot of deluded people who are maybe drinking too much or eating too much and so forth, talking too much." But that can be a dodge. Another thing about practice is, and this is sitting and other forms of Zen practice, is to be willing to get out of our comfort zone. For some people, that might mean going to the social gathering when you are afraid to, whatever you may tell yourself, or would rather sit. And this is not a black or white thing. If there, I remember years of where I preferred to sit rather than accept invitations to do things, and I don't regret it for a minute. It's hard to argue with Zazen as the supreme, the ultimate form of activity. But it's just another arena in which to question ourselves. Why are we really avoiding going to this social event? Because it can be very, it can be a great way to notice one's blind spots and one's habit forces. That's always an opportunity for in practice is to see where we fall short of the middle way, fall short of perfect concentration and mindfulness. It's kind of a social gatherings, especially with family, and maybe especially with family, are kind of a graduate level Zen practice. The of course, the obvious things with family is baggage of getting finding ourselves with people we've known for a long time or at one time knew very, very, very well, and knowing that we will have a tendency to slip back into old habit forces, old ways of reacting to our brothers or sisters or parents or children. This has to be a universal phenomenon. I've heard from so many people, in addition to my own experience, is when we go back to family, we can so easily get tripped up on old ways of interacting with them or reacting to them. Remember, I'd been practicing for, I don't know, a couple years here, even going to Sesshin, and went home once at Christmas, and we had a pretty big family. We all had our places at the table. This is when people still ate together. my place was, it's such and such a place, and my sister Tina took my place when I went home at Christmas, and it pissed me off. And there was a little skirmish there where it's a great, great feedback about how deficient our practice is when we get into these situations. People with strong social anxiety may just choose to not go out. We have to accept where we are in our development. And if the obstacles are too threatening or too imposing, then it may be better not to force oneself to get into these situations. But then maybe use that time for sitting. But if it's just the kind of run-of-the-mill, ordinary ambivalence about going to these things, then, you know, there's a place in practice for courage, for being a warrior, charging into situations that we fear, doing our best. With people we know very well, or especially family, siblings and parents, one of the key things is to be generous enough to give them the freedom to have changed. Because we do change. Maybe never as fast as we'd like to, but we do change. And it's a basic challenge to notice when we are keeping our brother or sister or parents, when we're keeping them in the box of how we knew them before. Habits change slowly. The self changes slowly, usually. So they may be very much the same as we remember them from age 10 or 12 or 14. But at least to see if we can not react to them as though they've not changed. Concentration, listening. Because it's a social situation, it can't be the kind of pure concentration that we can delve into in our sitting, because there are other people, there are other considerations. That's one of the most difficult things, I think, for most people in gatherings, is how much time you spend with one person and how much you might want to roam and get to talk with other people. This is even something that we can play with in our post-Teisho Sangha brunches. For the host of the gathering, it's especially challenging because they don't have the privilege of just hunkering down with one person and just drinking up that one conversation and getting to know that person in some depth. They have to be flitting around and minding things. And that leads us into the mindfulness feature. I talked about concentration. That's pretty simple. As difficult as it is, it's pretty uncomplicated, really just listening, concentrating. The mindfulness aspect can be, there are many more facets of that. And just to be clear, Zen practice is yes, concentration, holding the mind steadily on the object of meditation, but also the mindfulness. It has a mindfulness component because we have to notice when the mind has wandered. That's the mindfulness. Mindfulness is noticing. In social gatherings, there's a certain kind of meta-mindfulness or meta-awareness that we can cultivate to be more aware. Everything is about awareness. So an obvious one, maybe meta-awareness, is the work that went into the cooking and the preparation of the gathering. The invitations, the shopping, and here's another kind of meta awareness I think grows with practice. The length of practice is the appreciation that with these people, wherever we find ourselves, with these people, there is a karmic affinity with them. Otherwise, we wouldn't be there with them. And with that karmic affinity, we can appreciate them more. It's not just an accident that we find ourselves with these people. whether it's at work or family or anywhere else, Sangha, our mutual karma has brought us together. There is something, there is a need behind it. There's something, to put it another way, there's something we can learn from these people. But also that there is just this this affinity that confers a certain responsibility on us to not take them too lightly, not dismiss them too quickly if we're having difficulty with them. Another kind of awareness that we can draw from is to respect the history and our relationships that we with these people we're socializing with, and also the whatever cross currents there may be among these different people with us or even without us. Again, sibling issues. The more aware we are of the habit forces, the more likely we are to not react blindly. Recognize that with this brother or with this sister, we've always had a more difficult time, and maybe the particular issues we had with that person, with others less so, but then that's where we are. It's same as sitting in the zendo or sitting at home is know thyself, know our dispositions, our tendencies. Another kind of mindfulness to cultivate in social gatherings is to be aware of what needs to be done. And then drawing from our dana, our giving, offer to help set the table or finish the cooking or serving or shoveling snow on the walk if that's something that the host can't tackle in addition to everything else. Looking for what needs to be done. Probably many of you know that when people are in a demanding situation, whether they're just hosting a party or whether they're recovering from a loss, a death or an illness, rather than just saying, what can I do, which just imposes another decision they have to make, try to figure out what you can do, it's better, from everything I've heard, it's better just to do something. Look, notice, do something. And then whoever the host is or whoever the person who is in grieving can decline, say, okay, thank you very much. It's not, but at least there is that readiness to respond. You can't talk really about the holidays without getting into gift giving, and that's another form of awareness to be cultivated, is what the person really wants or needs, rather than what we think he or she should get. There's a whole art to that. You all know this. Gift giving can be so charged and complex, but it probably starts with doing our best to know who that is and what they really would appreciate, and not pushing our own preferences or ideas on them. there is the importance of working in conversation, working toward mutuality, where, just to take responsibility for oneself, not to just be talking and talking and talking and talking, but to give the other person a chance to speak. And that, most of all, comes through questions. One of the most important things in finding connections with people is asking them, showing interest, curiosity through questions. And then not just asking a simple question and having them give us just a flat answer, but then if you want to, you may not want to, but if you want to get to beyond the surface of the person, then ask further, like how. I work with people who are suffering from whatever, and then you might ask how, and then you could ask for particulars. Well, can you give me an example? What's the hardest part of what you do? That would just open them up like a book. Or use your imagination. Other things. By the way, I'm talking to myself as much to anyone else. I'm just offering some insights based on experience in these things, and just like practice on the mat, this is an endless, lifelong practice, this engaging with people socially. Another form of mindfulness is that it's a little bit dangerous to get into politics. And it's so easy just to lapse into griping about, I'm not going to say. But it can also be a way to connect if you're pretty darn sure that the person or the people you're chatting with are with you, then that could be a way to get things going, to get the ball rolling and establish a connection. But then, it's just pretty limited just to leave it at politics. And there's a matter of alcohol consumption. That can really, aside from oneself, watching one's own consumption, if you drink at all, the danger of drinking too much, but then also bringing awareness to the possibility that other people around you, the person you're talking with, is getting a little bit drunk, and to adapt to that. The vegetarian issue can be a problem. Even with ordinary dinners where you're going as a guest to a dinner, someone's home, let's say, there are those who say, you just eat whatever is served. And that is one way to go. I know I read somewhere that Aitken Roshi, that's his policy, just don't let them know ahead of time that you're vegetarian, because it's, imposing on them or whatever. But I differ. I think that it's a generous thing to just lightly tell someone ahead of time, I don't eat meat. I'm fine with whatever you serve. Really, believe me, it's all fine. And then I think it can save embarrassment later on. People have to figure out what the best way to go with that is. Remember, this just popped in my mind, being in Mexico with Roshi Kaplow, and And we were going to a party, and he got wind of the hostess fretting about what he would eat, as she knew he was a vegetarian. And just to break up, it wasn't just the hostess, it was others who knew that the Roshi was going there and was a vegetarian, a strict vegetarian. So just to play with the situation some, he had a little morsel of, I think it was goat meat, just to, so they couldn't get too fixated on what they thought of him or what the kind of person he thought he was. It was, he regretted it. He got sick afterward. And then we have this whole new area of danger about sexualized language or behavior in social gatherings. This is we're just starting to get into this, and there's a lot of sorting out that needs to happen. But talk about mindfulness, being mindful of a whole new understanding of what offends women. It's always women. meaning it's always men who are the problem.
Good correction.
Yeah. Last night I was, my wife and I were at a Hanukkah party, and there was a woman there, maybe 50 years old, and she had a very striking top on. I guess it was a tunic. I can never get this straight, what the tops are. My wife says, just call it a top. And I said to her, just met her, and I said, that's a very nice top you have on. And then I said, I hope you're not going to sue me for sexual harassment. And she laughed. She's waved her hand. Of course not. But it's not so obvious. I think with young women especially, they are ready to be offended. And we should respect that. Be conservative. Be careful. How can a man really understand how easily women feel diminished with sexual language or innuendo? We can't, so it's best to just be especially careful. Here's another test of one's practice in social situations is if you spill something, what do you do? Of course, you apologize, but then you can go too far with that. The main thing is to just fly into action and find a way to clean up the spill. Or if someone next to you spills something, same thing. See what you can do to help them. But just in terms of seeing this true nature functioning in its many ways, it's one of the most fascinating things to be in social gatherings. Especially if you have the awareness that everyone there is a Buddha. Everyone there is, from the very beginning, a Buddha, enlightened. Each one is trying in her own way or his own way to see that, to find self-completion. There's a Chinese proverb, lonely study in the mountains reveals less than listening to strangers at a crossroad. But not standing apart as some kind of clinical observer, still appreciating the marvel of it all of these different people with their histories and their suffering and their joys, and finding themselves together in what can be a challenging situation, but then making it work, making it a form of practice. Well, I think that's enough said, and we'll stop now and recite the four vows. All beings without number,
I bow to the gray, endless blind passion. I bow to uproot Dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot Dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot Dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha.